From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made May 1st when Steve Carell, Jack Black, Mindy Kaling, and other A-list comedians joined together for a virtual comedy festival and fundraiser. It was called COVID is No Joke, and despite the title, the comedians shared their takes on the pandemic in an effort to bring some levity to their audience. From efforts to bake quarantine bread, to how to make a painting at home, to smelling their own breath and their masks, they did their best to make light of the pandemic. The feedback online was mixed, and so was a reaction to a comedian's bit in an open mic in Los Angeles. He said, quote, "Wow, this COVID-19, I tell ya. I didn't see COVID 1 through 18, so I don't really know what this is all about." The joke came with awkward silence. The comedian was Patton Oswalt, performing, as USA Today reported, a deliberately terrible set on his balcony to an empty neighborhood. For the most part, the live comedy world has been put on hold during the pandemic as venues have been shut down for months. Comedians have found ways to adapt, from virtual shows to smaller gigs outside and more. Comedy as an art form has traditionally served as a way to ease fears during troubled times. Think the Marx Brothers during the Great Depression or Bob Hope's acts from World War II to the Persian Gulf War and even Saturday Night Live post-9/11. Many comedians say laughter has healing power, and there's also power in satirizing the foolish parts of society. But should we laugh at the coronavirus when tens of thousands of people are dying? How should comedians handle it? Where is the line? This hour, we're joined by four comedians who share their perspectives on this. Is joking about COVID a risk-reward type scenario? What's the most effective ways to do it? I'd like to welcome our guests now for the hour. Hello to Sarah Shipley, who's back with us now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. Good to be here.
Todd Youngman is in his 11th year of stand-up, also the marketing manager for comedy at the Carlson. Todd, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Hello to Sherelle Gator-Kinder. Hi, Sherelle.
Hello.
And welcome to Abby Feldman, who recently had a show at Comedy at the Carlson. And, boy, right before the pandemic, you were scheduled to open for Jim Gaffigan where, Abby?
In Buenos Aires, Argentina.
So bummer. I mean, are we allowed to laugh at this? I don't know what we're allowed to laugh at. But anyway, welcome.
I don't know. You just did, though, so hopefully you don't get canceled.
I know. Welcome, Abby. Thanks for being with us here.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, for you, I'll start with you, Abby. Where's the line here? How much of this is in bounds? Is there anything that's out of bounds?
Well, I just think it's important that comedians, that we talk about our own experience. I think as long as you're speaking from your perspective, I think anything goes, you know. Obviously, oopsie, that's my alarm saying.
Check connection, yes.
Yeah. I had to wake up. as long as it's your personal experience, you know, I don't think anyone can speak to anyone else's experience. So if you haven't had COVID or you haven't experienced, you know, the passing of a loved one or something like that, I would say don't touch that subject. If you have had experience, you know, doing some, you know, living with your parents in quarantine, like I have, you know, of course you can talk about that.
Gotcha. Okay. Todd Youngman, where's the line for you?
Yeah. For me, I don't know. I don't know as much as, like, I don't think I'm going to really go after that as a joke, the coronavirus itself. I think comedians will go after it, but I don't think they're going to go after the tragedy itself or the victims of the virus or the people who are suffering from it. But we, as comedians, we can take aim at it, you know, the seemingly absurd situation we're all in, because this is a weird situation.
Weird is probably a euphemism. I agree. But,
yeah.
But Todd, do you agree with Abby's point, though, that, you know, if you have had a loss in your circle, that's more in bounds to put in a comedy set versus if that's not your experience?
Absolutely. It would be a lot more difficult for me to do it as a comic to make fun of the situation. But I can still see that there's going to be comics who are going to come out, you know, with their guns going and wanting to poke fun at this situation. And what people don't understand, I think, about humor is that it doesn't mean you don't care about what you're poking fun at. A lot of times what it is, it's kind of a defense mechanism because you don't want to see or feel the pain and you're feeling it and you're just trying to diffuse it. So we make a joke. And I think a lot of people do that in their everyday life.
Yeah, well said. What about you, Sherelle? Where's the line for you?
Personally, I don't think there really is a line, but I think with that comes responsibility. If you feel confident that you have a bit, even if it's offensive, that it'll work, you can always give it a try, but you just have to be aware of the risk. I feel like the audience will always let you know. They're the judge, jury, and the executioner in those situations. But like Abby said, it does help to come from personal perspective because people tend not to get as offended then. But I'm all about freedom of speech and comedy. You have the right to say whatever you want to say. You just have to be prepared to deal with the consequences.
Yeah, and to that point, Sherelle, when you say the consequences, sometimes the consequences are, you know, sort of an angry backlash, even, and I don't want to wade too deep into the cancel wars, but even the attempted cancellations. But is that part of what you're talking about, that you know, if you want to put this in your act, be prepared for where it may lead?
Yeah, depending on what your topic is, because Todd was saying that some people won't, you know, most comedians aren't going to talk about the tragedy or the death, but then there are some people that kind of just want to push the envelope and almost shock value, so that is a thing that's going to come, but the audience is going to let them know that they're not about it, you know, so it's really about the risk, because you don't, our whole aim as comedians is to make the crowd laugh, to enjoy themselves, and the last thing that we ever want to happen is to turn an entire room against us, so we just have to make sure that we're making the right decisions in the material that we're putting out.
Sarah Shipley, is there a line for you?
I love everything that's already been said. For me, again, you know, Sherelle kind of just touched on it. My goal as a comedian is to entertain and to make people feel good. I'm not about to get on stage and you know, tear anybody apart or capitalize on anybody's misery or misfortune. So, and I think Abby touched on it really well. Is like if you're talking about your own experience through a lens that matters to you, I think you can say a lot of things. You know, some people might be familiar with Tig Notaro and her said about cancer. She wasn't talking about cancer as a joke. She was talking about her experience with cancer. And I think because of that, it was brilliant. If she just got on stage and talked about how terrible cancer was, I don't think it would have hit or been relevant or funny. But it's just about the lens that you come at it with and your art, your audience.
Well, I want to talk about why certain comedians have seen massive gains in followings during this pandemic, because clearly to me, people want to laugh. People want to find ways to kind of have a little bit of a relief, because otherwise we are all feeling the fatigue. We're all sort of on edge. It's a grind in many different ways. Obviously, Sarah Cooper, who has picked up 1.8 million followers online and has seen her work profiled by New York Magazine, New York Times, just about everybody. She is the Donald Trump lip syncer. And so I can't play a clip from her. It would just be Trump's voice. You wouldn't see her. That wouldn't help. But there's also a guy who's picked up 200,000 followers, and his name is Brent Terhune. And there's a phrase that I see online. People will say, you've been Terhuned. And that means you saw a clip that you didn't realize was satire and you thought it was real. Well, why do people get Terhuned? Why do people air a clip and say, well, this guy's an idiot? Well, here's an example of Brent Terhune and his COVID comedy. Let's listen.
So I just left Walmart, and the whole time I'm in there, everybody's mean mugging me and giving me dirty looks just because I'm not a sheep and I refuse to wear a mask. I got a condition. I was diagnosed with being selfish. I can barely breathe as it is. I'm like a human pug. The only mask I'm wearing is my CPAP machine. They want me to wear a mask and trap in all my CO2, which is bad. I breathe in the oxygen and breathe out the CO2, and it gets trapped in the mask. Next thing you know, I'm breathing in secondhand air and third-hand air, fourth-hand air. Everybody knows the oxygen can get in, but when you breathe out, all that CO2 just gets trapped in, and there's no way on God's flat earth that anything can escape that mask except for the coronavirus, which makes the mask pointless in the first place. And all these doctors out here saying, make sure you wear your masks. Well, I went to the University of YouTube and I graduated MAGA yelled loudly, so they're not the only educated ones out here. That is, if they can make their mind up in the first place, they said, don't wear a mask, then wear a mask. It's like science is willing to change its viewpoint on things when presented with new information. Well, I'm not willing to change. Ever. And my friend on Facebook said masks are bad and he's a doctor. He works for Dr. Scholl's. He works for a store that sells Dr. Scholl's. What I'm trying to say is all these doctors better stop having my best interest at heart because it's tyranny.
Abby Feldman, why does that work? Why has this guy picked up 200,000 followers?
Oh, well, that, I mean, working might be a subjective term
okay.
for some people.
Does
I'm
that work
sure.
for you?
You know, not for me, but comedy is subjective, you know, and like, you know, sometimes, you know, I understand what he's going for and, you know, he's doing work and, you know, people in that, and sometimes I'm trying to be really polite. That was long for me. I don't know. I started checking my phone. But I will say that, you know, people want to hear what they believe said by comedians. And that's what I do, and that's what he's doing. So we're in that together. And, you know, yeah, you're saying what you believe in the opposite way, and that's satire.
Is there a risk, though, because he's obviously speaking to an audience, or at least his growing audience is probably going to be the type who already agree with his perspective there. Is there a risk there, or do you accept that you're not going to put comedy out there that is going to please everybody ideally, you know, perfectly?
Well, I think that's what a lot of us do, and that's unfortunate. It's hard. It's really tricky to convert anyone, you know, and also it's quite arrogant to think that that's our job as artists, to convert people. Mm-hmm. I think all we can do is put out what you really think is funny and what you really think is true. And that's what, you know, that's what I try to do. But as far as that, and not saying I'm an expert and he has more followers than I do, I like to play with doing it super subtly in a way where people aren't really sure which side you're on. And like, you're kind of subliminally giving your message across and, you know, maybe don't spoon feed the audience so much, but maybe people want to be spoon fed right now because he's got a lot of followers.
Todd Youngman, did that work for you?
No, I didn't laugh, but Abby said, you know, comedy's subjective, and there's probably a lot of people who found that funny, and, you know, laughter, it helps people navigate through emotional grief, and that's been proven, and I'm a firm believer that, you know, creating and sharing humor, you know, we can cope better and, you know, ease some of the tension due to this pandemic, and that way, you know, at least you feel like you have a tiny bit of control over a situation that you have zero control over right now.
I think that's well said. Sherelle, did that work for you?
I mean, I see what he was going for. I think that a lot of people, he's probably getting followers just because people don't have anything to do. And it is, a lot of what he said is relatable because we're all dealing with idiots one way or another in our day-to-day life, especially with this pandemic. So I think that a lot of people are probably just laughing because they probably just ran into that same exact person at the gas station, you know? So I think that's probably why he's getting a lot of his followers and his momentum, is that people are just really relating to it in this time.
Hmm. What do you think, Sarah?
It's, you know, as a comic, like, I can respect anybody's craft and their attempts at humor. But for me, that kind of hurts my heart because I know that there are people that truly are taking that and being like, this guy gets me, you know? So I think in some ways that kind of humor can be problematic, and that it encourages people to kind of not care about other people. And I don't know. So for me, it doesn't work because of that.
Was it mean?
Oh no, but you know, it just kind of encourages that selfish culture of like, I'm not going to wear a mask cause I don't want to.
Well, I mean, I think he's riffing on that, though, right? I mean,
he is, but I think there are people that are going to hear that and be like, yes, I believe this to be true, and this famous guy is saying that, so it's also probably true. Like, I think there are people that don't hear that as satire. I think there are people that are like,
listen,
he's making a joke.
I'm kind of it's interesting because Abby and Sarah had such different reactions. So, for Abby, it wasn't subtle at all. For Sarah, you're saying people are going to end up sharing this thinking he's serious. That's what they mean by being terhune. People show up all the time and they're like, look at this guy. How dare he? Say these things. And if you actually read the text of what he said that he went to YouTube University and graduated, Maggie yelled loudly. I mean, like, I can't. really, but I'm with you though, Sarah. People aren't really kind of analyzing. They're probably listening to the tone as yeah. opposed to the words. So, you know, okay. All right, fair. We're talking comedy in a pandemic and where the line ought to be and, you know, maybe some of the risks that, that comedians are willing to take. Abby, what has work been like for you? Obviously, you're not opening for Jim Gaffigan in Argentina, so what's happening for you now?
Yeah, I would love work, so if anyone's listening, hit me up, Abby Feldman. I'm just making my own content right now. I'm applying for writing gigs. I'm doing a few freelance writing gigs. I've got a podcast, and I'm putting out an album of comedy songs now that's kind of gotten accelerated because of the not being able to do, you know, in-person gigs. So that's what's been going on. But yeah, making a lot of videos, you know, trying to Delhoon or whatever that guy's name was, trying to build my following up, you know. And maybe, you know, that was kind of interesting. Maybe it is, you know, people, you know, as a comedian, you know, to show a comedy video or listen to a comedy video for a bunch of comedians, it's not going to be the target audience. You know, this is for the average person. And maybe people, you know, really just want like a very silly, extreme, you know, take on what's going on.
Todd Youngman, what's work been like for you?
Well, back in May at the Carlson, we decided to do these drive-in theater type shows where people pulled into the parking lot. We built a makeshift stage on the sidewalk. And, you know, the first one we did it with four local comics, myself, Sarah Shipley, Brian Ball. And we did it, we teamed with Tony D's restaurant. And the idea was, you know, we're going to do this and all the proceeds will go to providing dinners to all the nurses and doctors helping fight the virus on the front lines. And we did that. And it was a huge success. And then a lot of headliners started reaching out to Mark Ippolito, our club operations manager. And then he booked two more shows after that. And they worked really, really well. And then we got the word that we can open up inside. Now we're back inside and people are coming out. Like Abby just had a show, I think it was last week, and it you know, people came out. It's proving to us that the drive-in shows and these shows, people are they're looking to laugh and wanting to be out.
Sherelle, tell me what the last, you know, 3-4 months have been like for your work.
My work has primarily just been bartending. with the death of live comedy, I've really actually been kind of struggling to find a way to stay relevant and kind of there because I haven't mastered social media or making videos, and I can't do the Zoom comedy because I can't stand still when I'm on stage. I'm always acting something out or running somewhere. So I'm just basically trying to stay limber and can't wait to get back on stage, you know, one way or the other.
Well, Sarah Shipley, your colleague Todd Youngman can't count. He said four local comedians. He mentioned you, Todd, Sarah Shipley, Brian Ball, and that was it. So,
oh, no. Who else was it? Who was the fourth? I can't remember.
I thought that was maybe part of the joke. But So, Sarah, you were one of them, but tell us what else you've been up to.
Just, again, trying to stay creative. For a while, it's kind of been up and down about feeling motivated to be funny and to be creative and not. So really just trying to stay in that mind space of wanting to, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel and eventually, you know, have a space to be on stage again. You know, as Todd said, luckily I've had the opportunity to be on stage at the Carlson outside. I've got some dates booked inside this summer, later in the summer. So I do have some motivation to, you know, keep creating and writing and remembering my set and keep working on my craft, but it's been difficult. I've done some Zoom shows. That's helped a little bit to stay in that mind space, but it's tough. It's tough when you don't know what's going to come around the bend. You know, trying to make funny little videos here and there, but it comes and goes, creativity and the will to, and want to do it.
Well, Sarah writes to a different Sarah writes to us to say that Sarah Cooper should officially be the only one who can do Trump humor now. She's the best. Love her videos. But it seems like so many comedians love to tell Trump jokes. And for me, at this point, that's not funny anymore. Things are pretty serious in this country. So that's from a different Sarah. Abby Feldman, what do you make of that comment?
Yeah, I'm pretty turned off as well. I have one Trump joke where I say people keep saying resist Trump, and I don't even find him that attractive. But it's at this point, it's like, yeah, he's he you know, I try to stand away from that. And I think Sarah's brilliant. I really do love what she's doing. I do worry though, like, is she kind of making him more palatable and kind of like subconsciously making people be like, oh, well, if he sticks around, at least we'll get more Sarah Cooper videos. You know, like, that is a kind of,
I can't believe that's going to move votes. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, Abby. I don't know if that's going to move votes.
I hope not. I hope not. I hope she moves votes in the left direction.
Knowing Sarah Cooper's politics as she writes about them, I think she'd be horrified to hear that maybe people would want more Sarah Cooper.
Well, even like Saturday Night Live, though. I mean, I do think this is a person. You know, in comedy, in media in general, when you put attention on something, you know, you're giving it attention. And is there such thing as bad publicity? You know.
Well, fair enough. But I also have to ask you, Abby. I mean, you look at what Sarah Cooper's done. You know, whether it's 1.8 million followers, profiles in different magazines and media, that's great. But when she does a Trump video, I don't think she's getting paid. And, you know, she's getting more interest. I suspect she will turn that into more paying gigs. But I think a lot of us who don't work in comedy, that we see that and go, oh, well, she's doing great. I don't know that she's necessarily seeing her bottom line increase that much. She'll probably find a way to do that, I would guess. But what do you think about that, Abby?
Well, none of us are. You know, when I make a video, I'm not getting paid. I mean, at least she's getting, like you said, it's all about exposure. It's building a brand. It's building your voice, building your style. And then, you know, more and more people know what they're getting when they see her. So then they have her on a Jimmy Fallon, or they have her on, you know, a Good Morning America or whatever. And, you know, that can translate into monetary gains.
Before we let you go, I know your time is tighter than the rest, Abby. Jeff Spivak recently profiled you in City Newspaper, and you talked about how comedy is often social commentary, that those two ideas, comedy and social commentary, are not mutually exclusive. And Jeff reported that you had a satirical piece highlighting the relationship between white supremacy and the police that got taken down from TikTok because it violated TikTok's network community guidelines. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah, I made a satire piece. Again, this is why I was kind of, you know, turned off by the other person's that you shared his satire video, because it was so overt. I guess my satire is a little more subtle, and they must have seen hoods and thought that I was advocating for the Ku Klux Klan, but that is far from the case. It's a product called Cool Comfy Cloaks that that people of color can wear to stay alive.
I don't know if I'm allowed to laugh at that. See, I have to be very careful.
Well, you know what? If you don't know what you're allowed to laugh at, what kind of country are we living
well,
in?
Well, I don't know. That's the whole point of
just
this
wear
conversation.
Wear your mask and no one can tell if you were laughing or not.
That's very funny. That's a good point. Abby, where can people find you online before we let you go?
You know, it's not funny when someone just says, that's very funny.
No, I mean... Hey.
People can find me at Abby Feldman, ABBY Feldman, on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. I'm on TikTok, but don't go there for anything good. So, you can see a picture of my actual human butt on Instagram if you go there right now.
Oh,
so that should drive some traffic. And, you can find me at my parents' house for the time being. Hopefully opening for Jim Gaffigan in the near future.
Thanks for making time for the program, Abby.
Thank you guys so much.
Abby Feldman, who is one of our guests this hour, as we talk about the lines in comedy. Todd Youngman, Sarah Shipley, you can see them on occasion at Comedy at the Carlson, among various venues. And, Comedy at the Carlson has found some creative ways to bring people out for sets and to bring the community together. And also with us is Sherelle Gator-Kinder, who's with us. We're talking about what's acceptable and what's not and where you draw those lines. Can I ask you, Sherelle, how you feel about, you know, broad and beyond COVID? Let's talk social commentary. Let's talk about police community relations there. How do you approach that subject, and can you add it to the list of what's funny?
Like I said, I don't think there's really a line in comedy. You can say what you want, and you better be prepared for whatever that brings you. But personally, in my comedy, I tend to stay away from direct social commentary, just because day-to-day on social media, I'm just inundated with it. So when I get on stage, I don't really want to talk about it directly, you know? I just feel like I want to bring some people somewhere else into my own world and kind of like more like escapism, you know? So I do tend to stay away from that. And I also probably wouldn't touch too much on that particular subject just because as a person of color, there's a lot of emotion that can sometimes come into that when you get deep into those kind of relationships. And I'm there to make people laugh, and I still haven't found a way to make that particular subject funny. So if I don't think it's funny, I can't quite talk about it.
Would you caution white comedians to be very careful with that kind of subject?
Yeah. I mean, I caution anybody because it's just such a hot button issue right now that you can enrage half of your audience, you know, just with one comment. So it's a thin line to tread for sure, especially in the current climate and time.
Sarah Shipley, is comedy social commentary?
Oh yeah, I think you can. You know, you can make anything funny if you're smart and tactful about it. But again, there are some things that I'm not going to touch because I'm not, it's just not part of my experience. And I'm not going to get on stage and act like it's something I have the business to talk about. So, I think there's a lot of comics that make a great living and are very, very witty and funny in their observational comedy about what's going on in our society. But I kind of stick to more lighter things that aren't going to make anybody upset if they hear me talking about them. So it's an interesting thing to navigate on stage in front of a bunch of people.
Todd, your set is all Trump jokes, right?
Yeah, that's all I do. Trump jokes. Yeah, you got it. That's
how do you feel about the comment from the other Sarah listener who said she's tired of Trump jokes?
I was actually tired of Trump jokes before the pandemic. It was just every late night talk show was their monologue was Trump jokes. Saturday Night Live, it was all Trump jokes. And, you know, it was funny, you know, to start, and then it just, you know, starts to get a little old. And yeah, there's a lot of humor in it, but for me, that was played out long ago. And but I do enjoy Sarah Cooper's stuff, but that'll probably get old to me soon. You know, I don't know. It's it got old real quick for me.
Okay, fair enough. And you know, you've all talked about, you know, the last few months, work drying up, the challenge there. And Sherelle, you joked that the work you've been doing is behind the bar because, you know, you're not really doing much comedy work. What do you make of all of the attention on someone like Sarah Cooper? But she has been a struggling comedian. She's got this unexpected moment in the spotlight, but there's probably a lot of pressure for her to figure out a way to monetize it pretty quickly, I would think.
I would imagine that she's honestly quite terrified but excited, because after you're on the grind for a while, you're looking for opportunities, and luckily she found one in this. But I'm sure that it does put a lot of pressure on her shoulders to think of the next thing, because she can't sit here and do that forever. You know, she can't lip sync to Trump and make a living off of that. So she's got to figure out how to push it forward and be bigger and be better and stay relevant. And that's most of the battle.
Yeah, I mean, at least everyone's got different tastes in comedy. She posted a link to her, what she called the before time stand-up before she became the Trump lip syncer, just one of her stand-up sets. I thought her stand-up set was really good, really funny, quite a lot of political and social commentary, but pretty fresh. And so I'm sure she's thinking about a lot of different ways to do that. Todd, do you agree that for those of us who are fans of hers, we're not maybe thinking about the fact that people in comedy, you know, even when you've got a moment like this, it may not be obvious how to turn it into a financial gain?
I don't know, but you know, and I'll make a point, and it's kind of a sad point. We had Michelle Wolf back in October, and when she came to our club, we had to beef up security because I don't know if a lot of people know, but she was the comedian that was at the Correspondents' Dinner, mm-hmm. the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So for someone like Sarah Cooper, I fear for her now because she's doing this mockery of Trump, and that's what she's known for. And you're right, she has an amazing stand-up set, you know, if anybody's seen it before, it's great stuff. But now I fear for her that when she does go to clubs, you know, we're gonna have to beef up security for, you know, just because she's making light of a situation, which is sad.
Sarah, do you view this as maybe a good problem to have for a comedian? you get lightning hot fame. It happens quickly and unexpectedly, because 3 months ago, there's no way Sarah Cooper would have predicted this is her life. And we're all going, well, how is she going to figure out how to? I guess that would be a good problem for a lot of people in comedy to have, Sarah Shipley.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a great thing. Our social media platforms and getting content out to people at the touch of your fingers, it's a great thing. I think it gets people's name out there, and but also it's stressful and overwhelming, you know, to have the pressure of producing content like that all the time. I think for her, it's kind of a waiting game till we can get back on stage. But I think, you know, people are going to come to shows when she has them again, because they recognize her name and from that video she posted or that thing their friend shared. So it's always wonderful when people can recognize your name. You know, for instance, if you're on Saturday Night Live and people recognize your name, they're going to come and see you when you're in town. So I think it certainly translates in the long term to monetary success and to, you know, but it's an investment up front that is, it's a lot of work, and it doesn't always pan out. But the more people recognize your name, it's always a good thing.
We're going to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We've got more clips to share with you as we evaluate comedy during a pandemic, comedy during a crisis, where to draw the lines, and how those in comedy are answering those questions for themselves here. And our guests work in comedy when they can, and they hope even more so as we go forward. Todd Youngman, Sarah Shipley, Sherelle Gator Kinder, all with us, and we'll get right back to it after our only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections. Do you expect police officers in your town to live in your town? Depending on where you live, many officers might not be residents there. And in cities like Rochester, that has become a problem, according to many people who want to see the laws and the rules change. We're talking residency requirements, where we expect police to live and why it matters, Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So when you think about comedy in a pandemic, there's been a number of comedians who've made an effort. And one example is Chelsea Handler, talking about masks, PPE. Let's listen to what Chelsea Handler had to say.
I know we're all going through a very confusing time. I know every time I leave my house to even go walk up the street, I'm like, what, do I need my mask? Do I need my gloves? What do I have to wear? And we don't have necessarily everything that we need. So it is a time to be resourceful. And since I'm from New Jersey, I'm resourceful, because if you're from New Jersey, you have to be resourceful because you have to get out. So if you don't have the hand sanitizer you need, I have a surplus of alcohol at my house at all times. This is vodka, just like it says. You can use any alcohol, really, tequila, vodka, gin, and just rub it all over, you know, wherever you want, anything that's going to touch anything close to your face. We want to rub and clean all the time. You can do it, rub it on your face. Okay? Gloves. If you don't have gloves, but you do have doggy bags, have I got a solution for you. You can just take these doggy bags. There we go. So you put your gloves on, and all you're missing is a mask now. So if you don't have a mask, get a bra. You can put this over your mouth like this, and you just wrap it around. You have to find somebody with very large breasts. I mean, they don't have to be huge, but just enough to cover your mouth. You know what I mean.
That's Chelsea Handler from the Virtual Comedy Festival called COVID is No Joke from early May. And I will say this, when there's not a live audience, there's a lot more pressure. It feels hard. Like, I don't know. Like Sarah Shipley, I'm sitting there going, like, there's not live audience, so some of these are landing with a bit of a thud. Would I feel differently if there's an audience there?
I think so. It's a little cringy to listen to someone make jokes and just have dead air on the other side. When you're listening to a special and there's an audience reaction, it kind of encourages and like reinforces your like, oh, that is funny. I think that's funny too. It just enhances the experience. Yeah, some of the drive-in shows were great because we could hear giggling and people had their windows down. There were subtle interactions with the audience, but I've done Zoom shows where there's just nothing and it just feels so gross. It's so cringy. So it's hard to perform in that space and also to be a viewer. Even if the content is very funny and entertaining, it can be really difficult to watch.
Sherelle, did you feel that way listening to that clip?
Yeah. It's just, like Sarah was saying, it's awkward to not have the crowd reaction to kind of respond to. That's part of the reason that I haven't personally done too many Zoom shows, is that
I really like to interact with the audience and kind of make the audience uncomfortable and play with that tension in the room. And you can't do that to a camera. So it's just kind of, an audience is really what stand-up is about, you know, really getting them to enjoy you and enjoy each other and laugh together. Like, that's what it's all about. So if you take the audience out of the game, it all feels kind of lame.
Yeah. Well, and Todd, I mean, the phrase I think of is on your side. When the audience is on your side and they want to laugh, and to Sarah's point, you know, that they can hear others laughing and that sort of snowballs, that's one thing. I think that the work in comedy is a lot harder during a pandemic, exactly for the reasons Sherelle just talked about. All of those things that are the dynamics of live comedy are on hold right now.
Right. And laughing is contagious. When you're in a room full of people and there's laughter, you're laughing. And if there's a small, like Sarah said, when we did these drive-in shows, it was really weird because you get up there and you're doing bits that you know are supposed to get a laugh at a certain point, and you're not hearing laughter, and all you're getting are people flashing their brights at you. That's how they specified that they thought something was funny. But, you know, it felt like you could go up there and do a 15, 20-minute set in like 7 minutes just because your pacing's totally off because you're not getting that laughter. So it was a weird disconnect. And it's the same thing if you're performing in a room that's, you know, maybe 5 to 10 people and you're not getting that laughter, because a lot of people won't laugh because it's not a huge room of people laughing. They don't want to be the ones, you know, seen laughing. So it throws your pacing off as a comic.
Rachel in Canandaigua writes to say, whenever I get overloaded on all the bad news, I find a Randy Rainbow video to watch. She has an amazing voice and an incredible ability to create new sarcastic lyrics. I highly recommend Wanda Sykes on Netflix. Her special was recorded in 2019 and has some excellent and mostly unprintable lines, but I was laughing so hard that I scared my cats. That's from Rachel in Canandaigua. Todd, you were responding. That's a name you know, Randy Rainbow. It's not one that I do.
Oh, Randy Rainbow. Yeah, he's great. He was in Rochester, I think, not too long ago at the Kodak Theater. But he's fantastic. You should definitely look him up. He does a lot of funny satirical songs.
Oh, he did the Cuomo song. Okay, yep, got it. All right.
Yes.
Michael says, I grew up with Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, Marx Brothers, Stooges, Mad, National Lampoon, SNL, Mad TV. I know that some of it is in bad taste, but the scariest people are the ones without a sense of humor at all, like Nixon, Reagan, and Trump. Telling jokes is a way of copying gallows humor. So that's Michael. Yeah, I mean, I guess I take the point that you know, he's viewing people in politics as having no sense of humor. That's an interesting point, though. Is it revealing? Yeah, I mean, Sherelle, is it revealing if people can't laugh at themselves? Do you think that reveals character if people can't laugh at themselves, especially if they're in power?
Yeah, 100%. I think if you can't laugh at yourself and realize that you make mistakes or occasionally do stupid things, that you're not really self-aware. And I think that if you're in a position of power, being self-aware is probably pretty important.
Yeah. Todd, agree with that?
I totally agree. Well said.
What do you think, Sarah Shipley? Should we demand that people be able to laugh at themselves a little?
I think it's a necessity, to be honest. And I think Sherelle hit it accurately. You know, it's a position of power. You're a public servant. It shouldn't be about you. So the more you can just be a vehicle for you know, serving the public and being in a position where it's not about you. You should be able to laugh at yourself when it's not that important to be the center of attention and to be the most important person in the room, I guess.
Yeah, I would say this to Trump supporters, and you can email me separately. I'd love to hear from you in good faith, honestly, in good faith. Isn't it strange that he seems unable to laugh at himself? And this is not a partisan thing. I mean, there's there's an event during presidential campaigns where the Democrat and the Republican get together and they tell about 30 minutes of jokes, most of it riffing on themselves. And when Obama and Romney did it, it was bring the house down stuff, making fun of each other, making fun of themselves, laughing at themselves. And it was great stuff. I don't see the current president able to do that. And again, I just find that strange. And maybe we've all met people who can't laugh at themselves, and it just feels strange. To Sherelle's point, you know, maybe just reveals a little bit of something about the person. But maybe I'm wrong. So if you're someone who loves President and you think I'm totally missing the mark, or you've got video that I should see, I would love to see it. You can email connections at WXXI.org and set me straight on that. But let me kind of get back to where comedy is going next year, because we are stuck in this morass of a pandemic. I think SNL tried to figure out how to do it in a distance way. Sherelle, I don't know if you saw any of SNL. You said Zoom has been not something you're all that interested in because you want that dynamic. You want the audience interaction. I thought SNL had a lot of misses. I mean, there were some things I thought were pretty creative and clever in the few editions they did of SNL kind of at home, but it feels totally different, and it's a new kind of challenge. Did you see any of it?
I tried to watch some of it, and it just wasn't SNL to me, so I just really didn't pursue any more of it. It's just a difficult thing, and I think that we're all going to be struggling with this for a little while to figure out the best way to go about doing stand-up, the best way about doing sketch comedy and without an audience. And I think that when this is all over, or whatever over is going to be, I think stand-up comedy is going to be a completely new game. And it's just interesting to see how we're going to make it work.
Well, and you told us before the program, Sherelle, that you think this epidemic has been detrimental to comedy. Can you elaborate a little bit more on why?
Well, we've already touched on the fact that the audience component is completely gone, so you're not having live shows.
But that'll
so
come back eventually. That'll come back eventually.
Yeah, in some capacity, and slowly but surely we will make our way back to that. But I think even more so than that, it's detrimental in the fact that as comedians, we talk about what we know, we talk about our experiences, and experiences are hard to come by when you've been stuck in your house for the last 4 months. So it's just almost a lack of material, because you're having the same COVID experience as everyone else, but you don't necessarily want to come out of this with nothing but COVID material. So it's just finding a way to stay relevant, stay funny, and that's really hard when you don't have things happening in the world, especially with how much negative things are happening. You're not having great experiences because you're quarantined away. So I think it's really been detrimental to a lot of us in terms of being able to express our voice and having the experiences to share with an audience.
Yeah, Sarah, did you see any of SNL's at home?
I did watch a little bit of it. I think there are parts that really hit and parts that miss, but you're going to get that with a live audience too. And SNL's kind of one of those things where they take chances and they go for it. So yeah, I think there were good things about it, and they did the best they could with what they had. So yeah, it was good and bad, but you're going to have that in any format.
Well, and maybe to be fair, Sarah, you know, for me, as someone who's just a viewer of SNL, who's seen it for years, and I don't work in comedy, it's probably easy for me to sit at home and go, well, that totally flopped. Just be funnier. That didn't work. But I'm watching this going, I have no idea what I would do if I had to, if I were part of a sketch crew, had to be at home, had to submit ideas, had to have no audience response. I mean, everybody can remember sketches throughout the years that half the fun is seeing the audience just lose it. And I know actors who break too often, Jimmy Fallon among them. You can't break every sketch, Jimmy. You got to hold it together. Not everything should break you. You know, that's cheap. But sometimes when they're losing it because the audience is, that's part of the fun. So I know this is different. Do you think we have to be a little patient with comedians right now, Sarah, because all of this atmosphere is so different?
I think so. I mean, you have to be patient with everybody. We're going through a hard time. You know, the fact that we're getting up and getting out of bed every day is a win for some of us. So expecting people to be creative and to be on and to perform and to be light in the face of all this is a lot to ask. So the fact that they put on televised shows amidst all of this, and, you know, then all of a sudden you have to be everything. You have to be the producer of your sketch, you have to be the team that maybe filmed it, and now you're doing your own costumes and your own makeup. So I don't know if they had teams that could come in and do all those things for them, or if it was just a one-person show at home. But there's so many things that go into producing a good, you know, product that I think we just have to be patient with everybody.
Todd, did you see SNL at home?
I did. You know, I was impressed because I mean, to get that many people in a Zoom format And to make these skits even remotely work, I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, again, a lot of the bits didn't work, but some were pretty funny. But to have to, you know, everybody's looking to change gears in this business. And I think they did a great job. And, you know, anytime you can get some more, you know, joy and laughter in this world, I'm all for it.
I agree. And before the hour's up, since I've got three people in comedy, I'd love to kind of pull it back and for you to share how you collect material. I mean, are you driving somewhere and something strikes you and you go, oh my gosh, I've got to write this down or leave myself a message on this, or do you set aside time to just come up with material? Todd, what's the process for you?
Lately, I mean, I have a new neighbor, her name's Pam, and I refer to her as my boozy neighbor, Pam. And she's given me like a plethora of material lately, and she's going to become a huge part of my set once I get going back on stage.
Okay. Get ready, Pam. Get ready, boozy
yeah,
Pam.
She's for it.
Sherelle, what's the process?
For me, I just stay alive. I have a pretty weird and interesting life. So as long as I continue to wake up every morning and walk down the street, comedy's going to be there for me.
Can I ask for just a little follow-up on that? Like, are you okay?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm fine. Okay. I just have random things that happen to me, and that's like a lot of my comedy is anecdotal and story-driven, and as long as I'm out here, things are going to happen, and I'm going to continue to say those random things into a microphone.
Sarah Shipley, what's the process for you?
First of all, I just love Sherelle so much. If you've never seen her on stage, you need to try as soon as you can or be friends with her because she's amazing.
Oh, thank you, Sarah.
My process is a mixture. I think there's magic in comedy when it's just an experience that you have, and then you're like, oh, that's funny. How do I translate that into a bit that other people will think is funny? I love that part of the process. But, you know, right now it's a little bit more difficult. You're inside. I'm not doing a ton. So it's a little bit more forced where you have to, you know, dig a little bit more for inspiration or maybe dig into some notes that you kept from, you know, a time before. And you have to kind of manipulate that into a set or a joke. But I personally love when you just experience something that's funny and then go through the process of trying to communicate that to other people.
Paul writes to say, hold on, let me pull this back up here. Comedy can be used for good, too. Don't forget that. There's a lot of talk about social commentary or cancellation, but comedy can be used for good. I take that point, Paul, and I think that's what Todd was just saying. I mean, what we need is more joy, positivity. And we saw that in one of the other clips that we have here as kind of comedy as a lesson from Max and Mel Brooks. Let's listen.
This is my dad, Mel Brooks. Hey, Dad. If I get the coronavirus, I'll probably be okay. But if I give it to him, he could give it to Carl Reiner, who could give it to Dick Van Dyke. And before I know it, I've wiped out a whole generation of comedic legends. Do your part. Don't be a spreader. Right, Dad?
Go.
I'm going.
Go.
Love you.
They're obviously separated by a window, and that was early in the pandemic before the loss of Carl Reiner. So, that was a clip that got shared a lot. And maybe to Paul, who just sent a note in, that's part of the point. You know, it's pretty innocuous, but do you dig stuff like that, Todd?
Oh my God, I love that. When I saw that, I mean, I'm an old school comedy nerd, and that gave me goosebumps seeing that bit. I love that.
What about you, Sarah Shipley?
I think I love comedy that you know, makes light of things that are truthful and in a smart way, and I think that's exactly what that bit is. You know, it's obviously very true, a harsh reality of the situation, but they're making it in a way that's palatable for folks to digest.
Well, and to the point you're making there, Sarah, I mean, there are people who are really hurting and struggling with mental health because obviously many older individuals who live in assisted living, living nursing homes, have not seen family or friends for a long, long time. That is can be devastating. It can be devastating for all of us who haven't seen family members for various reasons. But to you, that still felt pretty safe and productive, a way to kind of make light of that, but to also send a serious point, Sarah?
I do. I do think so. Yeah.
Sherelle, what did you think?
I mean, I think it was great. People need to laugh about things like that. And like Sarah said, they went about it safely. And I really think that that's the easiest way to get people to listen to you is kind of do it in a gentle way. I think when people feel like they're being yelled at, that they don't respond as well. But especially to put it in those terms, a lot of people don't respond or act responsibly until something affects them personally. So I think naming everyone that could pass away just from that one contact maybe made it more realistic in a lot of people's minds. So I think it was a great video.
All right, before we let you go, where are we going to see all of you next? Sherelle Gator Kinder, where might we see you at some point?
Huh, I don't know. That depends on when the comedy world starts opening up. I know I'm going to be doing an outdoor show at the Hideaway on July 31st, but the tickets are pre-sale. And they're going to be obviously limited numbers because of the social distancing and quarantine. But
all right. Well, good luck, and I hope that we can all see you on stage soon. Todd Youngman, what about you?
July 30th at the Carlson, I host a monthly drag show with Mrs. Kasha Davis, Darian Lake, Ambrosia Salad, and Kiki Velasquez Lord. It's called Divas from a Distance. It's at 9:30, and tickets can be purchased at carlsoncomedy.com.
And it is... inside comedy, you know.
Inside. We're back inside, yep.
Just want to make sure people understand that. Sarah Shipley.
All right. I am on a show next Thursday, the 23rd, called the Black Talk Comedy Show in the French Quarter. You can find everything that I'm doing on my social media at Funny Sarah Shipley or my website, funnysarahshipley.com. That's the easiest way to figure out what I'm up to.
Good luck to all of you, and thanks for the insight. I always dig talking comedy. I think in so many ways, comedy... does carry a lot more than just a joke. I mean, there's a lot of the cultural fabric of a moment, and this is one hell of a moment in this country and in this world. So I want to thank Sherelle Gator Kinder. Good luck to you. I do hope we can see more of you soon, Sherelle. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah Shipley, always good. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Todd Youngman, we'll see you as well at the Comedy at the Carlson. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Great voices and insight there. We always appreciate that. We appreciate the engineer of connections, Rob Braden, and the producer, Megan Mack. And I'm the host, Evan Dawson. And wherever you are, we hope you find something to laugh at this afternoon. And we'll come back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.